This is the Inside Pitch with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by Light Up Media Group. Now, your host, former USA Baseball National Team coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hello, everyone from around the world, and welcome to the Inside Pitch. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Well, today's show is brought to you by Audible.com, a great resource for audiobooks. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/insidepitch. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MPS player. Well, listen, we've got a great show today, and we are going to discuss catchers, how to evaluate them, how they evaluate themselves, top training techniques and drills, and how to make them better, and even how to be more instinctive as a catcher. So let's get started by telling you about our special guest today, Ron Devine. First, currently Ron is the executive director of the BCA, Baseball Coaches Association, an organization which represents high school coaches around the country and hosts a great national coaching clinic with outstanding speakers. If you've never attended this convention, you got to attend. It's outstanding. It has great speakers, great educators. You'll learn a lot, and you'll also make a lot of contacts. So we'll give you information later on the show on how to become a member of the BCA and also attend their annual coaches convention. Now, Ron is definitely a special teacher and coach. He's been a head coach in high school for 28 years. We're going to give you a little background. He still hasn't stopped coaching. He's an assistant coach at Tempe Prep College, Academy in Arizona. His resume is so long. It's got to be about 10 pages because he has done so much in the game. Obviously, I can't read it all. I'm going to give you a little background, and this will give you a pretty good perspective about Ron. He was a varsity head coach for over 28 years. As I mentioned, he's won a state title. He's been runner-up. He's got four divisional championships. In 28 years, he's been to the regional tournament 21 times. He's also been 13 times to the state tournament, which is incredible. This is almost hard to believe. He's been inducted in over five high school baseball Hall of Fames. And when I was reading the resume, I think I stopped counting. He was the National Amateur Coach of the Year, chosen by USA Baseball and Major League Baseball Association. He's also spoken at over 20 high school coaches associations, many of them two or three times. He's spoken, obviously, at the BCA. I've heard Ron several times. I consider him one of the best speakers, teachers, educators in the country and all over the world. He's also been with our national team program a lot of years. I can't even count them. For USA Baseball, he's on the board of directors representing the National High School Baseball Coaches Association, USA Baseball's Youth Committee. He's coached on the USA 18-year-old baseball team as an assistant coach and a head coach. He's been with several other national teams. Ron's just an amazing coach. He's done so much internationally. And also, you're going to get an idea here why he's been so successful. He's a professional teacher. His teaching accomplishments are incredible. Corona del Sol High School Teacher of the Year. Tempe Diablo Physical Education Teacher of the Year at Corona del Sol. He was selected by Walt Disney Productions as one of the top 60 teachers in all of America. And I think that tells it all right there. Finally, to me, Ron is an innovator, an outside-the-box thinker. That's why we have him on the show. We hope to have him more than once. And he will share some great ideas that have made, been successful for him in teaching catchers. So we're welcoming Ron to the show. We look forward to having him. Welcome, Ron. Great having you on the Inside Pitch. How are you doing?
Doing very well, Pete. And I thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to discuss baseball with you.
Now let's go to the next phase, which is obviously another tough one. The throwing part. What's the most difficult part that needs to be trained the most when it comes to after you receive the ball and then throw?
Well, there are a couple of things. First of all, getting the ball out of the glove. It's not catch, transfer, throw. It's transfer, throw. Transfer, throw, okay? So you have to work on getting the ball out of the glove to the bare hand as quick as possible. I know you've worked with a lot of middle infielders. You do a lot of things where you just flip the ball in your back, bare hand, correct, Pete?
Right.
Well, I do the same thing with the catchers. We start with no gloves, and we just transfer as fast as we can to the bare hand. And away we go. Then we'll take and put a glove on them, and we'll transfer it to the bare hand as fast as we can until they get the rhythm and the feel for it. Next thing you do is getting the ball up. Okay? It's not down. It's getting the ball up. Most catchers, what they'll do is that they'll have a big, long loop in their arm. You can't take that loop. It's got to go from transfer straight up. Okay? And I tell our catchers, I want the transfer up and in the middle of your body. Okay? Up to the middle of your body. And then they'll say, well, you can't throw the ball looking straight ahead with the ball in the middle of your body. Well, they're 100% correct. But what's going to happen as soon as you start the ball up? Your body's going to turn. When your body turns, the arm's in the throwing position. So it's up, get rid. Up, release. What happens in some drill work that you do, you recreate statues, okay? Now, what I mean by statues, if you saw the Heisman Trophy, it's that left arm out, knee up, ball in the right arm. A catcher statue is the catcher with his glove out, his hand up, and his legs are poised, and the ball's up. That's a statue. Well, I learned over the years, I don't want statues. I want catchers who can throw. So every time we do a drill, we have them not stop on top, but always come through so they always get that feel of throwing the ball. Because if you let a guy get up here on top too much and he's really been taught to get up to that right position to throw it, then the next thing he's got to do, he's got to load. He's got to reach back to get him more momentum to throw the ball. We want to teach him to get it up and get it out. Get it up and get it out. Once you've taught transfer, then you got to make sure that your front shoulder is always at the target. That's basic catch and throw. Front shoulder. A lot of catchers will take their front shoulder, open it up, drops the arms down, the ball takes off to the second base side. So you got to keep the front shoulder straight towards the bag you're throwing or people you're throwing to, and then the ball comes out and release. The third thing is the footwork. Everything you do is linear. Linear means straight ahead. If you have a pitcher who doesn't, and you draw that little T there, and you put the pitcher on that mound with the T in front of him, where the mound is, the rubber is the base of the T, he has to step on the line or slightly off the line, correct?
Yep.
Okay. I tell our catchers, we're still a pitcher. We're just like pitchers. When we get our body turned, we want that front foot to be on the line or slightly off the line towards the target. Because if you're getting too far off the line, the front arm opens, the throwing arm drops, and you get the ball that sails. We want to take and go linear, step to it, throw through it in a linear direction towards the target. One of the things I've noticed over the last couple of years with some of the young catchers I've worked with, they always throw to a target instead of through a target, okay? The difference is too many kids are throwing to the base and think throwing a ball right on top of the base is the best thing they can do. No.
Yeah.
The best thing you can do is get the ball between the knee and the belt because the infielder loves to handle the ball up there. And just don't throw it to them, throw it through them. And don't throw it to a person, throw it through the bag. So a lot of drills, well, I'll just put a screen behind second base, maybe 5-10 feet, and have the catchers throw the ball through the bag into the screen. But you have to work on the transfer, getting the arm up, getting the shoulder turned. Now, the elbow itself has to go through the holster. What I mean by holster is if you had a gun on your left hip, that left elbow has got to go down through that holster so that you run forward. If you let the elbow go perpendicular to the holster, then your arm is going to drop. So we want to go through the holster and follow through with our nose always up looking through the target, if you can visualize that.
Yeah, you know, and obviously, we're gonna go one more question. We're going to go into blocking, but before we do, and then we're going to take a break. When it comes to the throwing aspect, you know, the biggest debate or question always is what's better, quickness or, arm strength?
Well, if you're a big leaguer, you'd say arm strength. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's what they pay for. They pay for arm strength and hitting. If you're an amateur team, you want quickness. I mean, it'd be great to have quickness and arm strength.
Sure.
But sometimes the arm strength doesn't hold true because they are so wild with throwing the ball. I know I used to have a very good arm, an excellent arm when I was young, and I could throw the snot out of the ball. But I hurt my arm, and I had to learn very quickly, don't rely on such power, work on quickness and getting it there. And that made a difference in my throwing, even though I was a pretty good thrower. So, you know, if I have to make my choice, it was the perfect world, I'd say big, strong, can throw. But if I don't, and you have the little guy that you're stuck with, you just get the ball there quickly.
Great, great. And finally, then we'll take a short break. There's the third aspect, the blocking part. You see a lot of this at young levels, you know, really, really hard. Let's talk about that part.
Okay. Again, here's where I'm going to differ from a lot of people. I watch instructors who do lessons. I've watched and listened to big league catching coaches talk about how they want you to catch and how they want you to block and how you should do it. And I am not going to disagree with them. Okay, please, Pete, don't get me wrong. I'm not going to disagree with them. But what I will disagree is you have to teach and make sure the young man that you're working with, I don't care if he's 99 years old or if he's 7 years old, he has to know the basic fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
Once a kid knows the basic fundamentals, then you can teach him advanced techniques. Example, I believe that when you block a ball that's coming straight at you, you're going to center the ball up with your belly button. You're not going to kick your feet back because when you kick your feet back, it drops your chest down. I want you to slide on your shins and get square up on the ball and let it hit you in the belly button if possible. I want you to be as firm and as solid as a brick wall, but I want you as soft as a feathered pillow when it hits you. We want to drop the ball right in front of us, no further than 1 to 2 feet, but do it nice and soft. So the hands always lead to the bottom, or you always lead your glove to the middle of your body or to the ground. Hand goes behind it, and you, as you're sliding, you track the ball. That's where a lot of people go wrong. Track the ball with your eyes and see the ball hit you in the chest. And keep the ball in front. A lot of people kick their feet back, drive the ball on the ground. Well, sometimes when you kick your feet back, if the ball's coming so quickly, the hole's there and the ball goes right between it. I've seen it in the big leagues. I've watched it on television in the big leagues.
Sure, sure.
But I tell our young catchers, I want you to slide under the ball, track with your belly button, track with your eyes, try to set it with your belly button, stay wide, stay strong, but then I want you to just absolutely collapse in the pitch to surround it. It's like catching a water balloon. If you put your hands out there too hard or if you push it, the water balloon breaks. I want you to take that water balloon and engulf it in the body fat that you have. Be lovely to it. Make love to it. Make sure it doesn't get away. Okay? Now, the other part where I differ is when the ball goes to the right and the ball goes to the left. Well, everybody talks, there's a term called block to the V, quarter turns. Now, I'm not going to talk dirty or say it's negative about those two. Those are fine if you have catchers who are advanced. But I would not teach it to a young kid who's just first learning how to catch. I would teach him to work in straight lines. What you taught him straight ahead is the same thing you're going to teach him going to the right and to the left. You're not teaching all new drills. You're teaching one drill that you perfected going straight ahead. You teach him to slide out in front, center it up, and drop the ball right in front of you. Mm-hmm. If you're going to the left, slide to the ball, center it up, block to the ball right in front of you. If you teach those the one drill one way, the other two should be taught the same way. Now, is a kid gets advanced, then again, you might have to, you know, and you're a believer in it, then you take and teach them the quarter turn or block to the V. But I would prefer catches to stay straight up. Okay?
Yep, yeah. And give us one drill, especially for the young kid, how they can start. A coach can start teaching a kid how to block.
Okay. I teach everything in progressions, Pete. Everything I've ever taught is in progressions. And if they don't go to step three until they get step one perfected. So what I will do, and I'm an ex-football coach, I will get them in their stance and I'll point down and they'll slide and block, and block. I'll point right or left, they'll slide and block, slide and block. And then I'll mix them up where they don't know which way I'm going. So they have to see and react. Now, those are two key words that I always teach kids as a catcher. See ball, react to ball. Don't think to ball. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a stupid word. Think to ball. No, too many kids think too much. Okay? Killing it. A guy goes to the plate. He thinks too much. See ball, hit ball. You know? Catching.
And which is interesting because you're not using a baseball. Then you go to a baseball?
Then I go to a baseball. Then I'll throw the ball in front of them. And they'll do the same thing. Boom. Same thing. Same thing. Then I'll go right and left. Okay, then I'm going to become a real jerk. Because then I'll go from there. I'll start with the softballs, you know, the softer balls. And then I'll go to the harder balls a little later. Then I'll take and instead of throwing the ball in the dirt, I'll throw it right at them. So, they'll drop the block and it hits them in the chest. I said, no, wait, what did the ball do? It's in the air. Well, then why'd you block it? Did you see the ball come out of my hand? I thought I did. Well, did you track it? Well, you got to be able to track it from my hand to you. So if you see the downward projection, then you're going to get down a block. If you see the ball is going to come to you, boom, you're going to catch. So I'll mix it in, you know, always the same, you know, for these young men that way so that they can learn to see and react and stop thinking. Now, here's the problem I get into. Somebody will say, well, okay, Ron, you tell kids not to think. Catchers can't think. Now, I didn't say that. I said when you're blocking and you're catching, see, react. There's a lot of thinking that beforehand. The thinking is get the pitch from the coach to put down the fingers. Know the situation. Mm-hmm. Know how to make the calls. Remember the hitters, how to adjust the hitters. That's all the thinking part of it. How to back up a base. What base should you be throwing to? That's the thinking part. But once they say, fastball, he's in a stretch, the ball is coming. Now you take and you just see the ball and react to it. And I will just throw balls right and left. Then I'll back up, throw a little harder. Some guys will use machines. The worst thing I ever saw in my life, and if you're one of those coaches who does it, power to you. I don't believe it. You don't need to beat up catchers. You don't have to teach them a lesson. Don't get a machine, set it 90 miles per hour, and throw balls into the dirt. You don't make guys catchers. You make guys afraid of the ball, especially young
kids. That doesn't sound like fun.
It's not fun. I know it's not fun. I went to a college practice one day, and the coach put a machine out on the first baseline, and he set up the 90 miles per hour. I'm going to teach these guys to catch a fastball and block a fastball. Oh, my God. He just beat him up. That's not good baseball. That's bad baseball.
Yeah, you know, and I love what you said about, and we're going to take a break here in a second. I love what you said about seeing the ball coming out of the hand. We had Ryan Harrison on our last show from Slow the Game Down. One of the things, you know, we're talking about hitting. One of the things, you know, he mentioned was, well, you've got to start teaching kids when they play catch to be able to see the ball out of the hand so they can track the ball. Exactly what you're talking about. And he said that, obviously, the more they do that, that's also going to relate to the pitching. So that is so important, sometimes so undertaught. So I love you. I love that you said that. We at this time are going to take a short break. We're going to be back with Ron Dabini. So give us a few seconds here and listen to our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Youth Baseball Talk with Jim Cromer.
You coach some unbelievable pitchers. Did they all buy in?
Well, you know, it's like Glavin said, well, you know, my shoulder's been bothering me. When I first got there, he said, my shoulder's been bothering me a little bit. I don't know if I want to throw a couple times in between starts. I said, well, how much success have you had so far? And I said, why don't we be open-minded and give it a try? He fell in love with it. He ended up throwing more than any pitcher we had. But he would throw the day before the game.
Listen at youthbaseballtalk.com or download the show on iTunes or Stitcher. Youth Baseball Talk, only on the Lineup Media Group.
Also, don't forget, go to iTunes, Stitcher, or any major podcast outlet and click subscribe. And leave us a 5-star rating and review if you like the show. That just helps us out. And let us know about what you thought about the show. Feedback's important to us. You can also email me at peter@insidepitchpodcast.com if you have any questions, if you'd like to hear a specific guest, or if we can help you in any way to become a better coach, just let us know. The Inside Pitch encourages you to also join the Baseball Coaches Association. Ron Devine is the executive director. In a minute here, he's going to tell you a little bit about it. I've been to their conventions. You can go to baseballcoachesassociation.com. You can be a member. You can get access to a lot of their instructional videos and drills. They even have a certification program, which we believe, especially for volunteer coaches, is outstanding. It's so needed because, you know, volunteer coaches, they mean well, but we need to help them. And, you know, if you're a member of the BCA, you're going to get a lot of help. So we encourage you. And they have a national convention every year. It's outstanding with great speakers at all levels, high school, college, great educators. They have professionals there also. So now let's get back with Ron Devine. Continue, and we'll finish off the show with catching. And one last thing, Ron. We're going to have a couple questions. Tell us a little bit about the BCA.
Well, BCA was formed by Jerry Miles in 1991. And the purpose, and the sole purpose, was not to compete against any other organization, but it was to give the voice of the high school coach and youth coaches of America a platform and a place that, you know, we could meet and just be our level and, you know, get instruction. Now, we at the National High School Baseball Coach Association, commonly called BCA, we have a national convention once a year, and it's always the first weekend after Thanksgiving. Again, we have it at that time so we don't compete against the bigger national convention or any high school conventions that take place in January. We have 22 speakers. They are high school and college and professional speakers, but we don't have any dog and pony shows. We are basically fundamentals, and the instructors we have are good speakers. And I'm not saying nobody else has good speakers, but I know that when you leave our place, you're going to say to yourself, my God, I've learned so much, because we don't work on high tech stuff. We work on fundamentals. And it's in a way of, a good convention. We also, at the same time, and when Pete talked about certification, we don't really certify people. We give them credit for coming, for those guys who are teachers and who need hours of credit for advancement on the pay scale. You know, we give them certification there. We don't actually certify any particular coach.
Gotcha.
Okay. But at the same time, we do, have $1 million liability policy, which covers only that coach who signs up for anything he does in the game of baseball from beginning of the registration period to the end of the registration period. And it's something that, you know, with the things that are happening in our society today, the bullying lawsuits, stupid things that happen because you're not letting the kid have participation. He's not participating. He's not getting enough playing time. You know, lawsuits. We have a liability policy for him. But the best part is that it's a home group. It's a real get together, and, you know, not a baseball talked and taught in the hallways and in the bedrooms of the hotels. We just have a good time. I know I've enjoyed it. I've been a member since 1991. I was one of the organizers, or a few people started it. One of the charter members, but we're going to be this year in Columbus, Ohio. December 1 through the 4th. So, you know, we'd love to have you. Just go to baseballcoaches.org and take a look at it. I'm sorry, Pete, you were going to ask something?
No, I was going to say, okay, it is baseballcoaches.org. I apologize. I said .com. So we'll make sure we make that correction. So remember, it's baseballcoaches.org, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, just want to make sure. We'll get that on our website. And now let's finish it off. This has been a great, great podcast. Let's finish it off with something that I think is I've never seen, never heard. I believe it's we created this. We sat together at breakfast in Vancouver one morning. You know, I was talking. We were talking catching. Actually, I was listening. You were talking, and it was awesome. And you brought up about. You showed me some charts. You brought up the evaluation of catchers, particular skills where they can self-evaluate themselves or see themselves and determine, you know, what things, how they're doing things well in a game or in practice. Let's start with that. Give us an idea about what you created here.
Well, let me go back to what happened. When you're a head coach, sometimes you don't have time to do these little things. And because you're always worrying about the offense, the defense, and the pitching, and the rotations, and the substitutions. But when I became becoming an assistant coach, and I was at Chaparral High School, as a longtime catcher, I get so tired of only statistics you ever see on a catcher is pass balls, his fielding, which is attempts, errors, assists. Okay. The other thing is nothing else. And I thought, you know what? If I'm gonna teach the kid how to catch, you have to have something in your hand and chart a kid. I developed a chart over the years, and I'm still working on it. You know, I'm going on 69 years old, and I'm still learning more and more about this game, and I'm still trying to improve this catching chart. And what this catching chart does. And everybody's afraid of it, and it's nothing to be afraid of. It talks about each and every inning. You just mark down a little mark if they did it or not. If they haven't done it, you'll put nothing down. It charts how many blocks a catcher had in an inning. It talks about how many blocks did he have with a man on third base. How many blocks did he have with a man on third base that did not score? Now, that's important in the game of baseball. That's a great story.
Sure.
Great tool. You know, you get, for example, back in, I'm getting old now, so I can't remember. Early 2000s, I was at Chaparral High School. We were playing for the state championship, and we had a young catcher behind the plate. Bases loaded. We're up by one run with the bases loaded. That means the tying run and the winning run are third and second. And the young man behind the plate blocked 9 pitches in the row.
Wow.
Not one guy scored. He blocked every one of them. As a matter of fact, we got out of the inning. It was over with. We won the state championship at Chaparral. So, you know, you got to credit a kid for that. So you have blocks of men on third, blocks that don't score, blocks that do score. That is a pain in the butt. You don't want to miss a block with a man on base. Okay? How about the man on second base? We block with being on second base. How many guys did you block with a man on second base? Now, if you have a man on third and second, well, when you block it, you get credit for second and third. Nobody moved up.
Wow.
Was there any advancement on a block? Did you block with nobody on base? Now, somebody says, well, you're blocking all the time. You're going to get hurt. No, you're not. You get good habits. So we block with men on base, block with nobody on base. Then we have advanced blocks. Then we have blocks that we can actually get up and throw people out with. Do we do that? Fantastic. Then there are some things that we call block no chance. You know, there's a guy that throws a 48-foot curveball that bounces over your head. There's no chance you could have blocked that. You got to give that kid credit. The next one is a really important one to me, stolen bases. This used to really chap my hind end. A kid, you know, has a stolen base attempt. Great. I throw a rocket down there. And the second baseman drops it.
Yeah.
Or there's nobody covering.
Right.
So what do you end up with? SBE2, because he ends up on third base. Well, I have SB attempts, then SBs. I mean, he just beat you, downright beat you. SBs. Then there's CS, of course, caught stealing. But I have one called no chance stolen base. So I threw the ball down there. He didn't cover. It's a no chance to, you know, no chance stolen base. He was there. How about when a guy drops the ball? You had him. I had one last night in our ball game that we had. Young catcher threw the ball second base. It was about eye level, which, you know, I teach knee to the belly, but God almighty, you got to be at least leaning a little bit, young kids. And the guy was trying to make the tag too soon, and the ball pops out of his glove. He had the kid. I had to give him an NCSB. Or it's the guy who's on the mound who doesn't hold runners on very well, and he just takes off, and there's no chance you've gotten him. You know, the good Lord on a good day couldn't have shot him. He was there. He was safe. So I give him credit there. Then, of course, I chart pass balls. I chart pickoffs. You know, do we pick people off? And my pet peeve is catchers who drop balls. You know, I walk up to him and say, hey, little Jim, hey, be softer hands. You know, I don't yell and scream. Hey, mm-hmm. Be softer hands, catch the ball. And then, of course, the catcher who picks. I don't like picking catchers. You know, I want them to block the ball. So I had this little chart. I do it every inning. I also, in between innings, I give pop times. Now, there are times you can't give him because it's a bad pitch or, you know, he didn't catch the ball, he dropped it. But I try to time their throws between pitches, give them a pop time. Now, I do this every inning. When the game's over with, I get all the catchers together that after the game for a few seconds, and we'll go over the charts in front of them. Now, you have to remember something. I'm not an idiot. Well, some people think I am. But charts are only as good as you use them for.
Yep.
You know, there are some charts off the wall that if a coach has and he doesn't share with his players, then it's why even have them? Pitching charts. Why even have them? Hitting charts. Why even have them? Well, I share, and I have a sheet on each kid if you know for the game, and I share, and I'll write down marks in comments like, didn't get around the ball on the outside pitch. Very late getting down on the block. Should have been backing up first base along the fence line, not racing the guy down to first base. You know, I'll mark mm-hmm. your comments. If a guy makes a great block, I'll mark great block. So when the game's with us, hey, Pete, here's your blocking chart today. Now, I'll use what I used last night. This particular catcher, and a couple of them. Kid who started, his pop times for a freshman were a 203 and a 210. But then he had a bad one because it was a bad pitch, and next one he was 213. Difference between the 203 and the 213 was a bad rhythm, and the arm wasn't in the same slot as the one before. He blocked three pitches, all three with nobody on base. He had two stolen base attempts, threw one out, but the guy who stole the base is the one the guy dropped the second base. Then my second catcher, who caught for the I had for him, he had six blocks in three innings, and three with nobody on base, one with a man on second base, and three times nobody advanced on his blocks. And we share them, and I'll ask, hey, Pete, now you see your chart. What do you need to do to improve your throwing? Well, coach, I wasn't quick. I didn't get into a rhythm. Great. You have to have reasons why you have the charts and how to improve. So I take the charts home. I make it up so it's illegible because, you know, sometimes I write in Latin, can't understand anything. And then I rewrite them up, give it to them the next day, and I keep the sheet. Then on the computer, I will track everything the kid's done for the whole year. Then total them up, and I'll give the chart back to them, and we'll evaluate. The kid becomes a senior. We'll have 4 years of charts on them, and we'll say, okay, Pete, have you improved or not? But it's just a tool you can use to share. If you don't share, it's no good. But at the same time, if a kid's not blocking very well and you see that he's missing blocks or guys are advancing, what can you do when it's time to go to practice? You can work on the blocks. You can work on getting down the baseline the way you should. So it's just a wild and crazy thing that I do, and I think it's very useful. But again, charts are only as good as you use them for.
Well, I love it, and I'll tell you why. Because, like you mentioned, first of all, this challenges players, and also it evaluates them, and it gives them an idea. Because, you know, a lot of times, as you mentioned, you know, what about if a catcher throws down three times, he doesn't get the runner, But the pitcher had a long, you know, time getting home, and it wasn't the catcher's fault. Not that you're placing blame, but you're showing them that, you know, everything was good, but you weren't going to get that runner because the pitcher and the catcher didn't do things the way they should have. I think it's great for evaluating. I think it's, like you said, great to give them an idea, you know, what to work on. And this is done constantly. Now, you're a assistant coach right now. Obviously, you've been a head coach for a lot of years. If you're the head coach, who's keeping the charts?
Okay, that's just another question that comes up. Thanks, Pete, for asking that question, because I'm having that problem right now. I do it for our young catchers, you know, that I watch. I have the freshman team, okay? I'm just a freshman and volunteer, and I just love it because these guys are just like sponges sucking up all the material around it to get better. You know, I'll approach the JV coach. I'll approach the varsity coaches. Well, our varsity coaches have 6-7 coaches on the varsity level. You tell me you can't have one of those catchers, one of those guys chart? Nah, they're too busy doing other things. So you give it to the second catcher or the manager, and you teach him how to chart. You know, it's not hard. And I know for myself, I fight this all the time. People would rather do other things, watch the ball game, not be involved. But if you're a teacher, and again, I'm a believer that I'm a teacher first and a coach second.
And that's always, yeah, I love that.
And that's always been my philosophy. And I'm not going to stop teaching. I'll probably die with a piece of a pen in my hand, or I'll have a baseball in my hand, and I'll die on the field. But that's just the way I'm going to go.
Okay. Now, listen, we've got just a couple more items till we end the show. One of them is this question. Catchers catching during batting practice, good, and what should they be working on if they're doing that?
All right, do that again, because it kind of stumbled a little bit on your voice.
I'm sorry. The catchers catching batting practice, and if it's good, and because we have a lot of coaches, you know, that don't have time to work with catchers a lot of times, is that a good place to have them work on things, and what can they be working on during batting practice if they're catching it?
Okay. First of all, it's not a bad time to use them, but don't overuse them, okay? You cannot keep a catcher back there more than 1 and 2 minutes at a time. I would say 80% of the time when you're throwing BP, the ball's being hit. So what you're going to have to do in your BP sessions in that 1 or 2 minute period of time is throw some balls in the dirt also. I know it's going to tick off. It's going to tick off the hitter. I know, because he wants the ball right down the groove so he can hit. But every once in a while, you throw a ball on the ground so that he can block it. Or sometimes in BP, if the guy swings and misses it, have him work and throw the ball to first base or to second base. But don't just get him back there, because what happens is once a ball is fouled and hits you, and then baseball goes in threes. When it happens one time, it's going to be two more before the day's over with. So if you get one off the hand, you're going to get two more off the hand. So don't create fear, but work on a particular thing all the time. So you can get him in for 1 or 2 minutes, get him out. Get him back in 1 or 2 minutes, get him out.
Yeah, and you can, and if you're lucky to have a couple guys or 2-3 catches, you can rotate those guys.
Right, and if you don't have them, then coaches learn to throw strikes without having a catcher back there.
All right, Ron, this has been awesome. I want you to end the show with anything you like to leave our coaches around the world, any advice you want to give them when it comes to coaching or even catching, whatever you like. Go ahead and talk to the coaches.
Hey, Pete, I have to say this to everyone. Baseball is a great game. It's a wonderful game. Become a teacher of the game. Don't worry about your W's and L's. Worry about how well, how good your kids are becoming. First of all, as gentlemen, as players, as sportsmen. Be as competitive as hell when you're on the field, but respect your opponent. Coaches, be a mentor. Be a mentor for these young men. Be a good example. Teach. Don't preach. And be the best person you can be. Go and get all the advice you can by going to clinics, looking for books to read. Even Pete Caliento stuff's good.
Yeah. There you go.
I had to get you, Pete. You know, anything like that. I mean, Learn. Don't think because you win a championship, you've done a great job. You need to do crap. It's the kids who did it for you. Don't be complacent. Just get better. Those are my words of wisdom. And enjoy the game. Enjoy the sport itself.
That's great, Ron. And we really appreciate you being on the Inside Pitch. Thanks. Thank you so much. And we hope to have you back.
Thank you. And I appreciate it. And I wish everybody a great baseball season and a wonderful, wonderful year.
And everyone listening to the show around the world, remember, you're going to get a lot of tips on the podcast. Also, go to our website for videos. Check it out. Go to our Twitter at Inside Pitch Show. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/InsidePitchShow. Go to our webpage at InsidePitchPodcast.com. And don't forget, email me. We'd like to hear from you, what you thought about the show at Peter. It's Peter at InsidePitchPodcast.com. Not to mention, join the show. Go to iTunes, Stitch, or any major podcast outlet. Click subscribe. If you like the show, leave us a 5-star rating. Don't forget about our lineup media group for shows like Youth Baseball Talk and Let's Get It On. You can check that out on lineupmediagroup.com. Remember, coaches, education is the key to building the foundation.
This has been The Inside Pitch with Peter Caliendo, a Lineup Media Group production. Get access to all of our podcasts like Youth Baseball Talk, You're on the Clock NFL, and Let's Get It On with famed MMA referee Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock. Online at lineupmediagroup.com and on iTunes and Stitcher.